Welcome to End of Life University podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and today I am sharing with you an interview from the archives for episode number 434. This interview is with Charlotte Ouellette of the Celebrant Foundation and Institute, and we're going to talk all about celebrants. And the Life Cycle Celebrants is the name that the Celebrant Foundation and Institute has trademarked for the trainings that they give. But Charlotte and I talk a lot about the importance of rituals and ceremonies and how celebrants can help people plan those types of ceremonies for various times of life. And we have a really great conversation, so I was excited to share this with you, even though it took place a number of years ago, back when I didn't have good audio equipment, so the sound quality isn't what I would like it to be, but I hope you'll be patient with that, because there's a lot to be gained from listening in to this interview with Charlotte. So as you have heard in previous episodes during the month of December, I'm taking a hiatus in order to be a grandmother, so that's why I'm sharing with you these interviews from the archives, but I'll be back at the beginning of the year to get started again with a new slate of interviews. So I hope you enjoy your holidays, however you celebrate this time of year. And stay tuned for whatever comes next in the new year. I'll say goodbye to you right now, and we'll move on with this interview with Charlotte Ouellette. Here we go.
Our guest today is Charlotte Ouellette, who is the International Director of the Celebrant Foundation. Charlotte has written and published many articles about the importance of personalized ceremonies in many magazines like American Funeral Director Magazine, Divorce Magazine, Spirituality and Health Magazine, and has been interviewed on BBC Radio, Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and NPR Radio. Her TV appearances include CBS Morning Show, CBS News with Dan Rather, and NBC News. She proudly hails from Chicago, is a Columbia College Chicago graduate, and lives in New Jersey with her husband Mark and her dog Sky. You can reach Charlotte and learn more about her work at the celebrantinstitute.org website. So Charlotte, thank you so much for being here today and joining me.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Karen.
Well, thank you so much, Charlotte. It's my pleasure. I'm actually the one who gets to benefit because I get to interview interesting people like you and learn about the work that you're doing, and it just helps me to broaden my own knowledge base. So I thought maybe we should start the conversation by having you just explain what is a celebrant, in case there are people listening in who don't know what celebrants are and what they do.
Absolutely. Well, celebrant is an ancient word, and in many different kinds of institutions, you might have a celebrant that speaks. For instance, at the Catholic Church, sometimes there's a celebrant that comes up and speaks. It's not a minister or a priest, but they're part of the congregation, and they're giving the celebratory address. So the concept of the word celebrant is an ancient one. What we are is certified life cycle celebrants. And what we do is we are trained and certified to create personalized and meaningful ceremonies. We are a school, an institute that's online and live. So our teachers, we have about 25 teachers that hail from all over the U.S. and Canada. And we teach online for now 17 years. So it's a live online class, and it's taught in English and French as well. We have celebrants in France. We have celebrants actually all over the world. And we have about 1,000 celebrants. And you had mentioned the number before, and we actually do more than 50,000 life cycle ceremonies a year. The whole organization started in Australia in the 1960s by the Attorney General Lionel Murphy, who has a wonderful history, that did a couple of great things. He ended the death penalty. He brought the troops back from Vietnam back then, and he instituted celebrants. So this was it. He saw, and this is how we feel too, that, you know, in the Australian society, there are so many people from so many walks of life. Why not, instead of washing them out, you know, why don't we bring them out instead of having a society where you're not spending detail on the attention on the detail? Let's do that. Let's have a grand opening, for that matter. So he started the Celebrant movement, and then about 17 years ago, we went to Australia and the UK when they were actually launching the UK movement, and we said, let's bring it back to the United States. Well, soon thereafter, it just bloomed, and we have Celebrants in the U.S., in Canada, all over the world, and we teach at the course in English and French, and also soon to be Spanish. It is a Jungian-based course, so a lot of our celebrants learn about the importance of ceremony and ritual, not just based on how they feel. It's really about your client honorees, is what we call them, when we create ceremonies with and for them. We co-create with them. So in many ways, what are celebrants? We are, yes, womb to tomb or cradle to grave, life cycle celebrants, and we are creating ceremonies and officiating ceremonies and gifting ceremonies to people that want to mark these milestones and these rites of passages that are so important in our lives in a very authentic way. It's, you know, in many cases, when a celebrant does a ceremony, it's the client's voice, your choice, and your ceremony. So that's what celebrants do, and they do this both part-time and full-time, and it's just been going gangbusters for the last 16 years, and it's just amazing what all of our celebrants do. There's all different kinds of celebrants, and I will get into that a little bit later. Yeah, thank you.
Well, one thing you mentioned that I absolutely love is the idea that it's womb to tomb. And so I love the idea that celebrancy embraces the entire life cycle and incorporates death, because so often our society is so avoidant of death and dying and tends to not include it when they're looking at life and what life consists of. I love it that celebrancy emphasizes every milestone, every transition is important, including death. And that's really the mindset and the attitude that we need to embrace throughout our entire society and culture.
Absolutely. It's like in many ways, we're educating people. We're there for people. You know, when so many people come to us and they said, I do not want to have a funeral for my dad that's going to be drab, that's going to be impersonal, that's not really going to talk about him. How do I do that? So a lot of people come to us for that. Or they might say, you know, there was a difficult situation, either there was a traumatic death. Maybe someone took their life or a child died. And sometimes they can't find anyone to honor this. So it's important to be here for our society, for our community. A lot of our celebrants are community celebrants. So, you know, and it could be someone that's in their community that was a very important person that died. Or a lot of the times, you know, when we came out of 9/11 here on the East Coast, when that was our sort of our birthing, like the phoenix, you know. We were here for not just a funeral and a grieving and a tragedy on so many levels, and we did so many funerals at that time. So really, it's when we started, we were very keen on being able to help people with ceremonies that were around death and dying. And the different kinds of ceremonies are amazing that we do. You know, we do even living funerals for people that want to have a funeral before they die. They want to gather their friends and family around them and maybe share things that they want to say or do or gift, and vice versa. And, you know, also, as I said, memorials or funerals or any kind of life celebration, or on the anniversary of someone's death, or on the anniversary of a tragic time, like every year at 9/11, our celebrants get together in their community to do things that memorialize that day and respect those people that, you know, their families and the ones that they loved that were lost. And that's true for a lot of different celebrants. We even have a celebrant in Colorado, rather, when the forests burnt down, and there was a terrible forest fires, and the community suffered so much and people lost their homes. A celebrant by the name of Diane Gensauer was also a forest ranger, and she did an amazing ceremony for the people of the community. So there's so many different opportunities that we look at, where we can help the community when there's a deep loss, whether if it's with the person or many people or with something to do with a disaster in our midst.
And I love the idea. I know you've mentioned before that they're secular ceremonies because they're not associated with a religion, as I understand, but they still have a quality of the sacred. Is that correct?
Well, you know what? We talk to our honorees and we find out two things, Karen. What is it that they want in their ceremony, and what is it that they don't want? And the important thing that a celebrant does is listen to them. So, yeah, many times we'll have, someone saying to us that our aunt was extremely Catholic. Is there any way that we can bring this into the ceremony? So in this case, maybe there would be someone in the family that would like to share a prayer or something from that religious, sect that they're – there that the deceased was from. So that's something that we incorporate. But many times, in the Pew study shows this, there's a study called the Pew study that talks about demographics. About 65% of people mostly the U.S. and Canada, would be even higher in other countries, consider themselves spiritual but not connected to a particular religion. So a lot of times when we're doing ceremonies, we bring in the, as you said, either sacred space or ceremonial space, but many times afterwards somebody from the family will come up and say, you really picked up on the fact that we have this kind of a background, and the celebrant brought it to folk because we have this Jewish background or we have this Greek Orthodox background. And the funny thing is we may not have stated that, but that's what they got out of it, because we were careful to talk to the family members about how they wanted to have the ceremony, and it came through. And maybe you have a special guest, a special person in the family that would come up and say something in Greek or do something that's important in Catholicism, maybe a simple lighting of the candle with a little prayer that would lend itself to that. But we are really very much retransform ourselves to how our client honorees would like us to be in a ceremony. But I would say the majority of our ceremonies definitely are maybe interfaith or non-denominational, or have a sense of a spirit to them, but possibly not connected to a particular religion. And especially if the family is not religious, but at the same time there's heart and soul in the ceremony. That's what we really we concentrate on.
Well, it definitely sounds like you're meeting the needs of people who don't have a religious faith that they're part of, who may turn to their religion for a ceremony, but those without any religious connection are kind of left out there, not knowing, how do I create this? What do I do? So it sounds like celebrants are fulfilling a huge role in our society. And I wonder, do you feel that for a while, do you feel that people have undervalued the importance of funerals and ceremonies in the past in our society?
Yeah, because exactly what you said. If you have a growing group of people that are not religious or connected to a certain religion, but if they go to a funeral home, they'll say to them, what kind of clergy do you want? All of a sudden, a lot of people say, I really don't feel like anything, so they'll skip the ceremony completely. They're like, let's just, have the time at the cemetery, and let's just do something quick and get it over with, because they feel marginalized and disenfranchised by society. They are not given the opportunity to realize that this is something very special. This ceremony is theirs. It doesn't belong to a funeral home. It doesn't belong to anybody other than them, to honor and appreciate and celebrate the life of their loved one, and they can do it any way they want. And so that's why it's important to have a celebrant in many ways, is because we listen to people to find out what they want. And, you know, it's gotten to be really a big demand. As I mentioned, this gal, Diane Ganshauer in Colorado, that did the funeral for when when there was a forest fire and burned, the houses burned, that a funeral home brought her on board and said, we need to have people like you, a celebrant, and so that the community, you know, if they're not religious, they have somebody to go to that's going to create a ceremony for them, and we want to make this happen. So in a very short period of time, she became so big in the state of Colorado and now national that funeral homes are really sitting up and going and saying to themselves, we need to offer these kinds of personalized ceremonies for the families that come back to us. And it can't be, you know, it's great if someone has, you know, a certain religion that they're connected with, but if they're not, they should not be denied. And so, you know, this is sort of a revolutionary thing that we're doing. It's in the way giving people back their voice so that they know that they can honor that loved one the way they want to, and the celebrant formalizes that. And it's just something that has been grown in leaps and bounds in the last 16 years, and it's just a joy, and it's really something that it was time for it to happen. And I think there was a tipping point with 9/11, and when you know, the Western culture decided, it seems, that it's time to learn how to grieve again, to grieve like maybe some ancient cultures used to, like the indigenous people or First Nation people, and also, you know, Indian people from India and the Jewish people sitting Shiva. It's absolutely time for us to honor those people in our lives in a beautiful, personalized way. So, you know, that has been a tipping point, I think, 9/11, when that happened.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that having ceremonies and rituals help the grievers, help them with their grief process?
Oh, absolutely. Like, even during the interview process, we're talking to people when we find out, like, for instance, you know, dad was a fisherman and they want to have a fishing pole salute. So everybody in the family brought their fishing poles, you know, and the two sons went underneath them and they wrote a little song together. One of the sisters, who's very quiet, but lovely baker, baked cookies. So when people left, they had dad's favorite chocolate chip cookie recipe that was passed down through, you know, five generations of his family or something.
Wow.
And it's just amazing how when you know, you talk to the family and you actually do something really interesting. Listen. It's like,
yes,
the whole art of listening has gone out the window. But if you listen, and sometimes people don't want to say something. Maybe some people can't write a song and play a guitar. Maybe some people don't have a fishing pole. But there's something that people can do, you know, where you can get the family around it. Like, for instance, one of the this one lady who had died, the family, you know, always knew her for having chocolate kisses on her, one of their aunts, on a plate when you walked into her house. So when she died and they had the interment of the ashes, they also you know, took chocolate kisses and gave them to the guests, and it was just a beautiful thing, because they knew that, I mean, on the chocolate gig now, you know, that there was something that the children could participate in, and also the family, and it was something that they remembered her so well by. So yeah, it's something that if you open up the channels of communication, you can find out how family members feel comfortable in being part of a ceremony, and maybe there's certain things they can and can't do. And there's, it might be also something where there's a tragedy or a traumatic death, where you can get family members to simply come up and put each one of them a flower into a different flower to represent that person's life in a spectrum, in a vase, and maybe have the grandchildren put the flower in, and have the, you know, the parents put the flower in, and all these kinds of ways of incorporating the family. You know, there's so many different kinds of rituals, but I'll wait for you to ask me those questions later if you wish.
All right. Well, I did have a question. I have a friend whose father is in hospice, and you know, near the end of his life, he took his children aside and said to each one of them, no funeral. I don't want a funeral under any circumstances. So this man is still alive right now, but his children are not sure what to do because they want to honor his wishes, but he clearly doesn't understand the benefit a funeral could be to his family. And I was just wondering if you have any suggestions. Is there something we could say to him or tell the children to talk to him about that might help him kind of relax about that rule a
sure.
little bit?
Well, you know something, that's true for a lot of people. They're like, no funeral, I don't want one. And you know, sometimes the family members, a lot of times, are like, well, it's for the living, too. It's for the generation. They want to say goodbye. They want to be able to spend that moment of time with them closely and then celebrate their life. There's a couple different things they can do. Number one, it might be something you got to think a little bit out of the box. You might want to think, you know what, maybe Dad would like it if we came around, if he's home, bring different foods that he likes and have a living funeral and have a little dinner with him and go around the table and just exchange stories and express how much you love him and how much you've learned from him. It could be something like that where you're actually sitting at the table with him, or if he's bedside, you know, come together with the siblings and the family members and just sit down and talk to him one at a time about the gifts that he's offered you. So I think in many times it's just being able to do that and maybe having a little hand ritual, maybe all of you putting your hands together, one on top of the other like we did when we were kids, and have him put his hand on top and say, Dad, we're all part of you. We're generations and generations. You know, and so there all of a sudden all those hands touching at one moment would be it. Or maybe there's a little song that he likes, you know, to sing. And I know that Threshold Choir, which is a great organization that sings to people when they're dying. It's something that, you know, there are wonderful organizations, but this is something you can do too. Maybe he likes a certain song, you know, like Blue Moon. Blue Moon, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's funny, but if you could get everybody to sing it, it's something where it brings him calm. It makes him realize how important that the family is and how they're thinking of him. And, you know, and really, afterwards, say after he dies, there's always a thing where, let's say his birthday's on a day that in the following year, you can have a celebration of life for him with everybody there. So there's different things that one can do with you know, this gentleman, and also, you know, they can do to honor his life and after he dies. So, you know, and he may even say after something where the family gets together around him, yeah, okay, you know, I really want to have you guys, if you state that you'd like to have a funeral, or find out, like, why specifically doesn't want to have a funeral. Maybe, you know, there's something about it that it would open up a discussion, but it's not necessary for anyone to do a formal funeral at a funeral home. I think that any way that this gentleman feels comfortable, you can come up with all sorts of wonderful ways to celebrate his life, and you know, just don't maybe not use the word funeral if it has it leaves a bad taste in his mouth. So I think that's something that, you know, they can creatively get around.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think that funerals have a negative connotation in general in our society, and that we need to overcome that if that's the case?
I think in many cases it does. I mean, if you look at the movies and film, funerals are always drab and depressing and everybody's crying. So, and even the funeral home is considered, oh, you know, you don't want to go there unless you really have to. So, but a lot of things have been happening. There are trends that have the funeral, a lot of funeral homes try to change the way they look. And that's another thing, you know, people come into a funeral home and it just really depressing. But there's new things happening with even women's-based funeral homes where they beautify them and beautiful, you know, decor and light. Maybe there's a grand piano in there. They have a celebrant on staff. So there's all sorts of good things, but it has definitely over the many years, you know, and Hollywood hasn't helped, that funerals and funeral homes have been something that people just, it's not uplifting in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
True.
So true. So I was wondering, Charlotte, do you see a role for celebrants perhaps within a hospital? Because to me, it seems like there are a lot of traumatic events that take place within a hospital. And I'm wondering, maybe there are celebrants already working in hospitals, and I'm curious about that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we do have that. It's interesting because celebrants take our course and they become funeral and end-of-life celebrants. And also we have a course called Healings and Transitions for people who are going through crises. And, you know, here they were their own, you know, they graduate from our program and they're out there doing their celebrant work away from the, you know, the corporations, away from the big institutions. And all of a sudden, wouldn't you know it, the Mayo Clinic calls us and says that they have started this one hospital called the Mosaic Well-Being Center in Kansas City, Missouri, which is a extremely amazing new wave, I would say, hospital that integrates East and West philosophies. So it's a beautiful structure. They have, you know, beautiful gardens. They have food, a farm to table. They really want to welcome the community back into the hospital and the hospital to be of a well-being center. And so in doing that, they also hired a celebrant. And what does the celebrant do? She's an on-staff celebrant there, and she creates ceremonies for instance, patients who are going to have surgery. Well, then you would have possibly a ceremony to prepare the family and the patient to thank, you know, also to acknowledge the doctors. When the surgery's over, there might be a ceremony for that, for the healing and transition of this. And so the celebrant is also doing ceremonies for like the season so that, you know, the fall season when the farmers in the area have vegetables and dairy products and whatever, bringing them into the hospital and they're doing farm to table. Maybe there's a garden and there's people who have joined the hospital, or maybe some people who have died and you want to honor them in a memorial garden. She does ceremonies and rituals for that. So there's a variety of different kinds of ceremonies. And this is something that I have to tell everyone on the call, that there's a big need. There's a big need, everyone, for professionals to go into, to ceremonialists, ritual makers, to come in to senior homes, assisted living, and hospitals to create these kinds of ceremonies and rituals that bring people together, that, you know, brings us at a different vibration of energy when people come together and they honor this time and space like a fly caught in amber. You're in this magical space and you're sharing that energy and you're focused on what it is that you're celebrating. This is extremely healing. This is something that all of us come from different parts. Your great-grandparents came from all over the place, and their culture had ritual and ceremony. And what we're doing is we are reviving it right now. And it's not something that should be flippant, you guys, because if a big hospital like Mayo Clinic says that this is very important for us to do, and now we're going to be opening many of these different hospitals all over the world, and there is other hospitals from other organizations that want to have these celebrants to celebrate people's lives and all the different stages that it comes to them, and, you know, from when they're in the hospital and going for surgery, healing, or for those people who are, you know, have an illness and they honor the fact that they are where they are at, and it's a ceremony of coming together to acknowledge and to honor. These are very, very important things to do. It used to be that there was a tribe or a village or a group of people that could do that for one another. Now we have to do that with our families and in our society and make that happen. So this is something that is a trend and it is growing. As I said, senior homes, event managers are looking for people to help them create opportunities for the seniors to be involved in different kinds of things that really brings their life to focus and celebrates them. So these are things that are highly needed in our society. And anyone who's out there that's interested in doing this kind of work, where you should definitely delve in and investigate it, because it's very worthwhile and it's needed at this time in history.
And I was thinking, Charlotte, of how much healthcare workers themselves any part of the healthcare system could benefit from rituals for them to help them with the grief that they must feel, you know, when a patient dies, when the emergency room staff, you know, when a child dies in the emergency room and they have nowhere to go with their own grief and trauma over that death. It seems to me that even a simple small ritual could be really helpful for them.
Absolutely. You know, there are chaplains in hospitals, and that is a very good thing. But we've had quite a few emergency room nurses come to us and say, please come and do a presentation for us, because we need to know the stages of death and dying and grieving. And a lot of times we're not taught that in school. We're not taught that in medical school. We're not taught how to also support people who have lost their child or their, you know, there was an accident and someone in their family dies. And we're not trained. That's not part of our training. So it's something that is very important, and some of our sufferers are chaplains in hospitals as well. But the fact of the matter is education is important, and there is a need, you're right, in hospitals on different levels. So this is something that is coming into focus more and more. And, you know, once again, people on the call that have this kind of a background, there's a world of people that need your help.
Yeah, and you did mention like nurses asking you to come and do a presentation. I was curious, do you see people coming for celebrant training who don't intend to be celebrants in the community, but just wanting the training for themselves in their own life and work to apply it in other ways? Do you have students like that?
Absolutely. It doesn't matter if someone does ceremony. When you graduate from our program to become a certified life cycle celebrant, whether you do one ceremony, you know, for your sister, or you do, you know, some celebrants do this full time. It doesn't matter. We're here and we meet. It's really for the person who wants to become a celebrant and a ritual maker, and possibly also use it for other aspects. Maybe they are therapists and they're using it in their practice. We have one celebrant, Bonnie Cushing, who works with children, and whenever she's in a certain process with them of their therapy, different sessions, she might use a ceremony or a ritual in there to bring the child and the family members together to say, all right, you know, we've gotten to this point successfully. We've crossed the bridge. We've gone over the threshold. And let's take note. Let's be in the moment of where we were, where we are now, and where we're going. It's a beautiful tool. Another thing that's very, I'm just going to throw it out there because I interviewed a wonderful woman last night. Her name is Lauren Artress, and she is in charge of Veritas, which is an organization that talks about labyrinths, and she's in Grace Cathedral out in San Francisco. And the labyrinth is an amazing healing, a tool to use. And what a labyrinth is, it's a specific design where people start from the outside, and then they work their way, they walk carefully into the inside, and then they go back outside again. It's not a maze where you get lost. This is definitely going in and coming out. It's a meditative tool. But this is something that a lot of our celebrants have taken her program and have used other tools for people to, you know, sometimes it's not what you say, it's what you do. Getting people to come around and meditate and walk the walk and be able to feel their feelings and experience this time where they can, which is a wonderful ritual. So, you know, these are things that more and more people who are celebrants might not be doing celebrant work, but that might be their career that they've had before, or maybe they're taking care of, you know, they're caretakers, and they're using this for their own needs, especially, you know, in their home where they're doing the caretaking. So a lot of people embrace celebrancy in any way that, you know, fits, that is their cup of tea, or how it may evolve with them in the future. But, you know, and some, we also get a lot of celebrants who may have been or are ministers that feel that maybe their specific institution doesn't allow them to do ceremonies within their institution, but they want to do certain kind of ceremonies, and they do so, they can on the outside. So, and they didn't have this kind of a training on how to create a ceremony, not about me or you, Karen, it's about them. So it's that listening and learning how to write a ceremony, how to present it, how to officiate, the beautiful gift of giving them the ceremony, all that that's is very important. But at the same time, they don't have to go out there and be a full-time, part-time celebrant. They can, you know, use this work that we do any way that enriches their lives and others.
Wow. It's just so beautiful to see this training is really a foundation, and individuals can launch from it and go in many, many different directions and use the tools that you're giving them to create something that's unique and individual for them as their own gift to society.
Yeah, and now that we have, I'd like to bring this up too, there's quite a few of our people in our organization that work with animals, animal bereavement group, or work at cemeteries that are, animal based, and it's, or animal rescue, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to do a ceremony for an animal rescue or at a cemetery that's about, you know, for animals, where the people there that run it would have a celebrant and say, let's do some special event where people who've lost their animals and have them, you know, here on our grounds can come maybe once a year and talk about how they missed we got to think about it. These are our animal companions. People call them pets, but a lot of times they might be closer with their pet, their animal companion than some people and their family. So this is really a very important thing to be able to also have, be able to honor all those things in life that have been important to us and that have died and are now on the flip side. So this is truly important, and I think that celebrants who also do ceremonies for animals, it's a very big part of our culture that we do this, and important. And also it introduces children in the beginning of their young ages to death and dying. And sometimes it might be a pet of theirs that died. So celebrants also take part in that. And it might not be something, celebrants do this as a career, so a lot of us, of course, get paid for our services. But, there's a lot of work that we do for people on the house because we're happy to do it. And we're very much about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to, at this time, just ask if anyone has a question. I wanted to open it up for questions. If you're on the telephone, you can press *2 on your keypad, and that will alert me that you'd like to ask Charlotte a question. You can also type in a question in the chat box, which is kind of down in the middle of the page. There's a separate box below that says Q&A, and that's a more private place if you want to ask a question anonymously. The chat box asks you for your name, but in the Q&A box, you can submit it anonymously. So I just wanted to read a comment here, Charlotte, from Grace. She wrote, "What a beautiful movement this is. Thank you, Charlotte, for sharing it with us. When my late husband passed, we had a ceremony around his deathbed. It made a tremendous difference to me and my adult children. I have tears of joy knowing that this is increasingly available to everyone for so many different needs." So thanks, Grace. That's beautiful.
Yes.
And Deborah wrote in, "I am an interfaith minister, deathbed doula, and experienced ritualist, always as a giveaway, but interested in what fees to charge."
I would be happy to talk with her offline, but I can, I would say that to really understand what is it that she would like to do and what to offer. But a lot of times our celebrants who are working with the family for a good 20 hours, writing the ceremony, making sure everything's just the way it should be, you know, the name's pronounced correctly, everything, which I'm sure she's familiar with. And, you know, the time that we go and possibly there's a at the funeral home, or maybe we're at the cemetery, depending. But usually we start at around 450 or 500 for a ceremony. Now, it could be a little less than that or a little bit more than that, but considering all the time and effort and also gifting the ceremony afterwards, that's usually what we charge. Some places it's a little bit more, and in some places it's a little bit less, but usually after a funeral home has one of our celebrants come in to do a ceremony, they're usually blown away, and they say, absolutely, we understand that, you know, you guys are really, this is not a cookie cutter ceremony, and you really took time to interview the family. It's obvious, you know, and the funeral home may be getting quite a, you know, a pretty big amount of money for the funeral, whatever it might be, and is happy to give the celebrant about $500. So usually I would say that is our average, but that can be a little bit more or a little bit less depending. You know, I hope that answers her question.
Yeah, she was wondering if insurance ever covers the fees of a celebrant.
Insurance?
Like maybe... Yes, the funeral home or something, prepaid or plan or something.
Oh, yeah, that should definitely cover the celebrant. Absolutely. A lot of times, well, it depends. It really depends. If there's a, it depends on the insurance that the person got for their, you know, when they died. And if it includes a minister to officiate at their ceremony, then that would be in there, I would think.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then, Charlotte, another person asked about if you'd talk a little bit more about the training itself. What does the training program consist of to become a celebrant?
Sure. We have a training three times a year, so whoever would like to come on board with us, it takes place in the winter in January, in the summer in June, and again in the fall in September. And it is a three-month course followed by another three-month course. It's about 6.5 months altogether. The first part of the course is called Fundamentals of Celebrancy, where all of our students come in and take that course. It really steeps you in the concept of ceremony and ritual and opens up the discussion of what moments in your life were marked or missed. And we give you a very good basis about the importance of ceremony and ritual. And if anybody stops you on the street and asks you for your elevator pitch of what a celebrant is, you'll know what it is. But there's this, that part of the course is, and the course is online. It's live with the teacher. So the course is totally online. And then you would, similar to what we're doing today, call in so that you would be speaking, but there would be a slideshow for every course. The course is about an hour and a half. Once a week. It's a Jungian-based course, freshman college level, and the first 3 months would be fundamentals for about an hour and a half. And then you would get finished with that, and then if you wanted to become a funeral celebrant, you can also become a wedding celebrant and something called a ceremonies across the life cycle, family and children celebrant. Well, then you would then take that course, and it's 1 hour and 15 minutes a week, and you can pick your time. We have times for students that are any place in the world, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, morning, afternoon, evening, and late evening. You can pick a time slot that works for you, and our teachers are just amazing. They walk the walk and talk the talk, and have been celebrants and teachers for many years. And we have a very engaging curriculum where we're going to be talking about death and dying, of course. We're going to be talking about the importance of a ceremony. We're going to have you observing funerals in your area or videos of funerals that we have taped if there was not a celebrant near you or happening at that point in time. You are going to be in the deep side of the pool. You're going to be able to write funeral ceremony. Your teachers will give you a case study so that you will know. You'll also be able to have access to the library, which we have thousands of ceremonies and rituals, and also agreements, so that when you're working with the family, the agreement is are in there. We are a nonprofit educational organization. We're a 501c3, and we also have nonprofit attorneys, you know, that we have, you know, as far as our organization. So, you know, when we say that we have an agreement, so when a celebrant goes and has an agreement with a client, whether it's a family member or a funeral home, you know, these are things that have been checked out with our nonprofit attorneys, but also while they are in their region, it's important for them to take a look at the agreements and stuff and make sure that that's, you know, the kind of wording that they want to use. Maybe they want to change it, whatever. But all that is talked about. We talk about in class the theory of ceremony and ritual, the importance of it, your relationship to the world and ritual and ceremony. We also delve into the fact that, you know, what is a funeral? What is the history of funerals? Why is it important that we grieve? How do you write a funeral ceremony? Because it just doesn't happen, these ceremonies. It's not like you talk to someone and it flops on the page or you think it's a really good way to start. There is a recipe for success. There was a gentleman by the name of Van Gennep that created the in the 19th century that took a look at the recipe of how you write a ceremony, the different stages that people have to go through within this ritual for them to come in, be part of the ceremony, and then be transformed into their new status at the end, and to acknowledge what the ceremony meant and you know, the and what you wanted to accomplish. If you don't have these aspects in the ceremony, then all you have is something nice, but you don't have a ceremony. Okay, and if you miss the opportunity to have a ceremony that is authentic and valid and, you know, and really has that recipe and magic, then that moment is lost. So it's so important that you know happens. So these are the kinds of things that we have. We do have a curriculum and syllabus. Happy to share with anybody, and you can also go to our website at www.celebrantinstitute.org and go under Institute and check out all the things that are covered. You know, it'd be a pleasure and an honor. And also, if there's anyone on the call that wants to talk to or meet a celebrant in their area, I'm happy to make that happen. Just plain curiosity's sake, because when you see and hear a celebrant ceremony, it's very moving. Life is full of tears and joy at the same time, and you know that's what a lot of our ceremonies do. They bring up the happiness. They allow people to be in the moment, to cry, to laugh, to be able to embrace that entire emotion beautifully. We're really proud to be doing this. So anyone that's interested in the course, let me know. I don't want to blab on forever. So I'll send it back to you, Karen.
Yeah, because I'm actually interested in the course because as a doctor, I think it would be extremely helpful in the work that I do with patients to understand ritual and ceremony. And because in some ways the office visit with a patient is a little bit of a ritual itself. You know, we do the same things, check the vital signs. You know, there, I can see how understanding ritual, it could make that visit so much more impactful to know the elements of ceremony and incorporate some of that into a visit with a patient.
Absolutely, because as you said, it would make that moment even more mindful, even more focused, even more personal, and that's all healing. The bottom line is, it's healing for the person that's on the receiving end and on the giving end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that idea. Well, one thing I had that I neglected to ask at the very beginning, Charlotte, about how you became interested in being a celebrant, like what your story is.
Oh boy, I have an interesting story. I was actually working in technology for many, many years at AT&T, and one of my dear friends who I had known for years said, "Charlotte, there's a gentleman that's in from Australia. He is the head of something called the celebrant movement in Australia. Have you ever heard of it?" And I said, "No, I don't know anything about this." And she says, "Well, would you be so kind and meet with him?" And he's in New York now because he's on his way to the UK to launch the UK chapter for Celebrants. And I said, "You know," I said, "Gail, you usually never call me up with this kind of an offer, and I would be happy to meet this gentleman." So I met him, and he was just amazing. He had been chosen to lead the celebrant movement in Australia for many, many years. His name is a funny name. It's Delhi Messenger III. And when I met him, he said, "Charlotte, it's so," I'm going to do my Australian accent of him, "Charlotte, it's very important that we mark the milestones in people's lives, not in a way that you and I do, in their own way." And he says, "We've been doing this now for 40 years in Australia, and, you know, Gail and I have been friends for quite a few years, and I told her, Gail, if you want to start it in the United States, by all means, you're going to have to get off your butt and do it. So she called me because actually I helped launch her husband's computer consulting company with AT&T Bell Labs, and she always felt that there was a great thing that I did, and maybe I could help her out with this as well. So I said, you know what, Gail, let's look into it. So I went to, I said to her, what I will do is he's on his way to England. I'm going to get in the plane and follow him there and see what he's doing there. So this is the moment, you guys. This is what I want to tell you. So I go to the UK, and I'm following this fellow with this funny Australian accent, and he is going to this one location where it's a beautiful place in Brighton, beautiful fields, and it's a cemetery, but it doesn't look like a cemetery. It's a meditative cemetery. People come and they have their loved ones buried there, but there would be a plant or a tree or, you know, a chair. It's this garden, and they had these this one beautiful room looking out over a reflecting pool, and the place was loaded with about, I don't know, 500 people. It was huge, and a bunch of celebrants and other people were at the front, and I realized that one of the celebrants in the UK worked for the BBC, and this was being televised, and I'm like, all right. So we're there, and this one fella, his name was Tony Walters, and he had just, was an Oxford graduate, and he wrote a book on the fact that you know, in Western society, death and dying is really considered something that's in the closet, and there's something that we need to do about that, and the harm that it does for being that way. So he said, is there anybody here that's an American? So I knew I was in big trouble. So out of the 500 people there, I raised my hand. He goes, please stand up. And said to me, so, you Americans, when, you know, all of a sudden when someone says that, you know, you're in deep trouble. He says, you Americans, when somebody dies, you are trying to find, you are searching for, you are, you know, I said, the word you're looking for is closure. And you guys, I was just going out there to check this out for Gail Sarma. I thought, you know what, I'll check these people out. I'll see what's going on. There's celebrants on the panel. This one gentleman is standing up, very, you know, hotshot, a guy from Oxford. He's asking me this question. Gail wants me to start the celebrants in the United States, and, you know, I don't know what that's going to mean because there wasn't, it never existed. It doesn't, it's something that the U.S. and the North Americans, I didn't even think of Canada then. I came from New Jersey. I didn't even know if it was going to get off the ground there. So I'm standing there, and I said, well, I said, about closure, I said, I really think it's a horrible thing. And I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to advise everyone to do the same. Let's open up the window, the imaginary window on our right. In fact, can everybody do this on the call? Open up your little window. Mm-hmm. Now I want you to take closure, which is a ball, and pack it really good and just take all this idea of closure that you've been entrained with over your entire life about what to do about death and dying and things that happen in your life that are crises related, that may be even tragic, and that you shouldn't, you know, just keep it in yourself and have closure, and just put it in a big ball, and then I want you to take it with all your might. You throw it out that window so far, and you hear it bouncing down the street as if you live in San Francisco, and it's going down, 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 and you can't hear it anymore. That is what I told him. I said, we have to do this. We have to have opening. We need to have a grand opening. Why is it that when somebody goes to see someone to talk to, they call a shrink? That certain person shouldn't be a shrink. They should be an expansionist. But our society tries to minimize us. Okay, so the whole concept is in our brains, you guys. We've got to get rid of it. We have to have opening. We have to have celebration of life. This whole concept of going to a shrink, it's really, we're going to an expansionist. You're going to your expansionist, or you're having, you know, it's very important when we're using language, how it defines us. So after that moment, I went back to to New Jersey and said, Gail, let's start the Celebrant Foundation Institute. It was a Celebrant Foundation Institute, but there was, you know, no students. We put something out there. We had our first six students. We had 9/11 occur in New Jersey, so we sort of came out of those ashes. There was someone who I was doing a wedding ceremony for, and someone who I knew very well, and the man who was her spouse to be, that she had been with for 10 years, was father to her children in many ways, even though they were not his children by birth. He was in building one, and he died. He was going into just help out a buddy who had to go take his kid to the dentist that day, and so he went in at that time to help him out and trade hours with him. And instead of having a wedding ceremony, of course, we had a ceremony of a ritual to honor those, to honor, well, for the wedding that did not happen. We had, the family came out, we had a wishing and a hoping ceremony because we were hoping Glenn would come in the door. We didn't know where he was. We thought maybe he got away. Nobody knew. People were lost in the maze of confusion and terror. So, anyhow, from that experience after that, there were so many ceremonies that, you know, we did in our neighborhoods to honor those people who were lost and the family members, you know, year after year. And the interesting story about this, the woman who was going to get married to this gentleman that she had been to for so many years, it turned out that, you know, after 2-3 years, she was together with the church group, and she met a man who had lost his wife, and they got together shortly thereafter, and they called me to be the wedding celebrant. So her life started again, and it was something very joyful for them and for the family. So it was interesting, but to see from, you know, death and life, death and birth defines us, and we have to once again embrace this. Without death, we don't have life. Without life, you know, birth, we don't have death. So this is this circle, this grand circle that we have in our life. And, you know, so many of our other celebrants have the same experience. So when I came out of this experience and I came back to New Jersey, I really felt that, you know, this is a movement that's going to take off. And then we offered it as an online school, and that took off. And so now, as I mentioned, we have close to actually 1,000 celebrants from at least 15 to 20 different countries, and many people are having this as an encore career, which is they get to a point in their life where they really want to do something where they're letting go of their daytime job, and maybe this is something what they want to do into retirement or something that they really want to do because their heart and souls are singing in this way, and they want to be able to have, you know, make a living, and at the same time they want to be able to do something that is very joyful for them. One thing that I'd like to add is something that we had done in the Celebrant Foundation Institute on the weddings is that we took us about 4 years to pass a law in the state of New Jersey that included certified wedding civil wedding celebrants to be able to officiate at weddings in the state of New Jersey. And we're actually going, that's also happened in Washington, D.C., and there's other states that are following suit. We're going for New York, and there's other, you know, and then there's Oregon and Texas that hopefully will be coming along as well. So a lot of our celebrants are also changing laws and creating the celebrant movement to be in the forefront of, you know, of people's rights. You know, we are rite of passage activists in many, many ways, and activating people's lives through ceremony and ritual and giving people the voice to be able to say, this is my ceremony, just like the lady that was on the phone, that I'm having for my husband, that we're having with our family, that, you know, we are, and it matters to us because it's our history and nobody can take that away from us. It's how we want to be celebrated. It's how we want to be remembered. And I think that's very important for us to do as people and also to pass it on to future generations so that they can, you know, feel proud and honored and do this themselves and pass it on.
Wow, that's really beautiful, Charlotte. And I just want to thank you for this work that you've done, getting the Celebrant Foundation and Institute started here in the U.S. And I'm thinking of what a great ripple effect it has had over the years as all the celebrants you've trained have gone out into their communities and they're bringing change and healing and peace into their communities. And it's really a beautiful legacy that you're creating here. And I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, and there's nothing more important than cross-pollinating with great organizations like you, like yours, yeah.
Absolutely. And we've talked about that, how the more we bring like-minded people together, the more we can make change happen in our society. And that's part of what Death Expo is all about, is just to tell more and more people about the work you're doing so they get exposed to it and we can make more connections. So I'd like to invite everyone listening, be sure, go check out the website celebrantinstitute.org and take a look. There's so much information on the website. Whether or not you would like to be trained as a celebrant, maybe you can think of creative ways you could interact with celebrants who are already in your community and creative ways to incorporate ritual and ceremony into your own life and your own work. So Charlotte, thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, thank you. And in closing, I just want everybody, I'm going to give you a little ritual you can take home with you, all right? Because it's important that I can share this gift. Take three candles, put them, they can be imaginary right now, and light the first candle and say, this candle is for those people who came before us. And you light the candle or have somebody light it. The second candle, those people who are in our lives now, maybe those people who are with us in this room, right? And maybe those people who are in our lives that have made a great impact on it. And then let's light the last candle for future generations and how we are going to impact them. Okay, so it's a three candle lighting a ritual that you can use in a lot of different ways. Maybe with your friend with a hospice, you know, that where you can bring in the past, the present, and the future. And so with that, I thank you all for all those three candles, because you wouldn't be here without the past, present, and the future. And I wish you all well, and it's a joy to be on this call. Thank you once again.
Thank you, Charlotte. What a perfect way to end our call with our own little ritual of saying goodbye. So goodbye to Charlotte, and thanks everyone who joined us on this call. Thanks for being here and participating.